When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Motor Mouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
We've partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, helping to raise awareness and help find a cure. Thanks to our partnership, we've been able to create a short series of special podcasts uncovering those within the motorsport community who've been affected by these devastating diagnoses. You can hear those stories, including the Williams F1 team's planning director, Richard Jones, right now on your chosen podcast player. The charity work all year round to help develop research and raise awareness through schemes like their newly launched 10 Ways We Can Help for people affected by a brain tumour diagnosis, which includes an interactive guide along with all of their support offerings on their website, braintumourcharity.org. A huge thank you for your support. If you can donate anything, you can also do that through the motormouth.club website or through the Brain Tumour Charity directly, and together we can help every single person affected by a brain tumour. It's season 8 and we're really excited to be once again teaming up with F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula 1. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport. And let's face it, any chance to get close to Formula 1 this year, we are all over it. And the brilliant news is you can now return trackside thanks to F1 Experiences. Enjoy the very best race tickets and track hospitality, first class hotels and unprecedented access you simply cannot get anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 experience, visit f1experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 Experiences package by using the code MOTORMOUTH when checking out online. So what are you waiting for? Experience the 2021 F1 season firsthand with exclusive access courtesy of F1 Experiences. Get booking today at f1experiences.com.
Hello everyone, Tim Sylvie here. Now, today's guest hails from Austria. And this week, Harry Benjamin, I am going to test you on your geography skills rather than wow you with my usual local facts about our guest's hometown. So, with that in mind, can you tell me the 8 countries that Austria borders? Now, keep in mind, it's landlocked.
Yeah.
Right, so there are 8. Go.
Hungary.
Very good.
Yeah. Well, that's what it used to be called, wasn't it? The Austrian-Hungarian Empire, whatever. Austria, Hungary. Well, obviously Austria. Yeah. Hungary. Czech Republic.
That's 2, yeah.
Oh, yes. What else is around there? Austria, where are we? Oh, God.
Oh, dear.
This is so... Oh, can I have a clue? Give me another one.
Okay, I'll give you a clue.
Obvious, isn't it?
One of them is a country that we always end up playing in football and usually losing to, but not this time around.
Germany.
Really?
Okay, yeah. Germany. So what have I got? Austria. So I've got Hungary, Czech Republic, Germany. And then what's around there as well? Oh my God, this is terrible.
I'm going to give you another 15 seconds and then you're out.
Luxembourg.
Luxembourg is incorrect. I can't see you getting any more. So that's three. Oh. That's three out of eight.
It started off well.
It started off okay, yeah. And you did say Austria as well, though, which is a bit of a...
What else is round there? Germany? Okay,
I'm not going to give you the answers because...
Italy.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Okay, you've got half, 50%. All right, I'm going to leave the other four for when we introduce our guest because he doesn't know, then we've got major problems. and no Googling in the interim, please. Talking of which, shall I introduce today's guest?
I think we better get on with it, yeah.
So today we're joined by Christian Kleen, a man who graduated from karting in his native and aforementioned Austria into Formula BMW before winning German Formula Renault and then onto F3 Euro Series and later, of course, into Formula One with Jaguar and then the rebranded Red Bull team in 2005. He had stints in Le Mans before returning to F1 with HRT. However, there is so much more to talk about, not least his new DTM exploits. We're looking forward to hearing all about it. Christian Kleen, welcome to the Motormouth podcast, and please put Harry out of his misery and tell us what the remaining countries are.
Yeah, hi there. Thanks to be part of the show. Will be nice. And it started off a bit. I think I have to fill in some of the countries, I guess.
So we've got Germany, Czech Republic, Hungary, Italy. There are four more that border Austria. What are they?
Slovenia.
I would have never
correct.
Have gone
there. Slovakia.
Slovakia, yes.
Switzerland,
and one more.
Liechtenstein.
There we go.
There you go.
To be fair to me, I think I probably would have only got Switzerland. The rest of them, I was, didn't stand a chance. And I did geography A level at school, which is the highest you, like 18 years old. That's the exams you take over here for going to university. So clearly, not a great start.
You got 50%. That's not too bad.
Not 50%.
That's a pass. I'll take that. Christian, thank you very much for coming on to the show. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on. So, where are you today? Are you in Austria? Or are you in any of the eight surrounding countries?
Yeah, and one of the eight surrounding countries, I'm in Switzerland.
Oh, you are?
15 years and currently in Switzerland, hiking up the mountains.
Wow.
Nice. Actually, because I've seen some pictures, I think, on your Instagram where you've got some amazing surroundings to go training in as well. It must be quite a spectacular place to live.
It is. It's beautiful. I love the mountains. So in summer, I do a lot of hiking, mountain biking. But then obviously in winter, I love skiing. And there's plenty of places to go around here. And also it's quite central of Europe, so it's quite easy to travel to the racetracks. Mm,
especially nowadays as well. Well, let's get on to the racing and let's go way back when. Take us back to the beginning, the karting days. How did you become part of motorsport? Was it something in the family? Often it is, or sometimes you just take an interest in it. How did you get started?
I guess it was because my father was interested in motorsport a lot, but he wasn't racing himself. But he always went with friends to Formula One races. And when I was little, probably around seven or eight, can't remember. He took me to Hockenheimring anyway. And straight away I fall in love with motorsport as well. And, from there, I got the interest in it. And then later on, when I was like 11, we went to a go-kart race, saw those karts, and I said, I have to be in one of them. So we just rented one. We went for a weekend to Italy. And basically, that's how it started. But it was just, for fun on the weekends, with the motorhome, the go-kart. My sister was with us, my mother, the little hamster, everything was.
Loads of fun and probably some very fond memories. What do you make of those days? What was the scene like back then in karting? And are there any names that you were racing against in your very early years that we might be familiar with now?
Yes, so with Robert Kubica I was racing. I can remember him. He was... I remember when I met him for the first time or saw him for the first time, he was in Parma in Italy. And he had this this red, I wouldn't call it a racing suit. It was just a red suit. It looked like he was working on a petrol station. That kind of overall he had on. But he was extremely quick already. He just had a white helmet. I remember that as well. And then I guess the karting days back then were much simpler, was less factory teams than now. And, you know, my mechanic, for example, was my father, which was my biggest handicap because he's actually an architect. So I wasn't so good about around the go-kart, but most of the time we made it to the finish line.
Oh, well, that's good. It's funny, I was up at Wilton Mill kart track last week, and it's funny seeing how serious karting is taken these days. I mean, all of the karts were fully branded, covered in sponsors. All the kids, who some of them were 7, 8 years old, covered in sponsorship and different brands. The dads are there, you know, tinkering away, but they've all got their awnings and their motorhomes. It's serious business, isn't it, these days?
Yeah, it's very serious business. And I guess that's, I mean, it's good. I guess when they're very young, they learn a lot because the competition is, I guess, even higher. More professional. I mean, they have data system, data recording, everything in these go-karts nowadays. Probably that's why they end up early in Formula One as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And now after karts, you moved up into Germany BMW series around 1999. Tell us about that time. You had some success. You moved into German Formula Renault. That must have been quite an exciting period for you, making that transition into hardcore racing. What are your memories of that period?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, go-karts was still more or less a hobby for us, and we traveled just myself and my father. And then when I got into single-seaters, it was the first time that I was racing for bigger teams. And it was just more professional, probably because my father wasn't my mechanic. And yeah, I mean, I did the BMW Junior, Formula BMW Junior Series in 99. And I mean, I just loved it. It was bigger cars, single-seaters on real racetracks, Formula One racetracks. It was amazing. And I had probably a bit of a slow start, let's say. Only my third year, Formula BMW, I then ended up third in the championship. And then from there, it just took off, basically. I always had the Red Bull sponsorship, but then they started to invest more, let's say, in me. I could go to the bigger teams, to the good teams that you have to run with if you want to fight for the championship. So in 2002, I went to JD Motorsport, did Formula Renault Germany and the Euro Cup. I won the championship in Germany and finished fifth in the Euro Cup, same points as Lewis Hamilton back then. Execo. And there it started to be professional, let's say.
So you're properly making your way up the ranks, and then you get to what doesn't exist anymore, but what is effectively what Formula 3 is today, the Formula 3 Euro Series. And that is when things start to really heat up as well, and you become on the radar of a few Formula 1 teams, not to mention the Jaguar Racing team, of course. So what were you thinking at this stage? Were you a little bit, you're right on the cusp there, you can see Formula 1 in your sights. Is it a bit nerve-wracking? Is there a lot of pressure at that time?
No, to be honest, when you're in Formula 3, Formula 1 is still so far away. I mean, it's like on another planet.
Right.
You don't realize that you are like almost below it, let's say. And for me, I did Formula 3 in 2003, and the plan was to do 2 years. You know, 1 year to learn, and then the second year to go for the championship. But I got really in the grips of the car very quickly. And basically, my first year, I was already fighting for the championship and finished second, but also won the biggest race of the year, the Marlboro Masters, which then opened up a possibility, let's say, to open a door into Formula One. And it was Red Bull who managed that and helped me to get the first test at Jaguar Racing. And I mean, everything happened so quickly, I couldn't realize it. And at the end of the year, I had already my first Formula One test, and it was mind-blowing and almost too fast.
Yeah, you're not the first that we've heard that kind of sentiment from who's been involved with the Red Bull program and sort of rushed through into Formula One. But take us through what the Red Bull program was like at that stage. We all know what it is now and how ruthless and cutthroat it is, and it's win or die. Well, what was it like back then? When did you first get exposed to that Red Bull program. And it sounds like, from what you're saying, it was hugely beneficial for you at that stage.
Absolutely. I mean, from home, we didn't have the money to run in motorsport, not in single-seaters, because the budgets were just too high for us. But at that stage, I had already Red Bull as a partner. To be honest, the Red Bull Junior program wasn't the way it is now, let's say. Dr. Helmut Marko was at that point not involved in it. Basically, I could choose which series where I go to next. And if they're happy with, then they just gave us the budget and we could run it. And I always had a direct contact to Mr. Matešić directly. And I didn't have a contract. It was all handshake. So therefore, my single-seater career was, let's say, not relaxed, but easier.
Yeah.
And but there were one or two, instances. Helmut was not fully involved in the program, but he had his saying, let's say, in it already at Red Bull. So one example is it was Thursday, the day before the last race of the German Championship in Formula Renault. And it was still a title fight between Bruno Spengler and myself. Friday, free practice. On Thursday afternoon, I had to drive 7 hours to Graz, where Helmut is, just that he could tell me within 5 minutes of a meeting, if I don't win the championship, the Red Bull money is gone for next year. Oh. So with that kind of, heavy backpack, let's say, I went into the final race.
Wow. That's
not always easy. Not always easy. But at least, I guess all the junior drivers, we got the chance because of Red Bull to drive, the best teams, best championships. Yeah. That's what you need, and ultimately you have to perform. But it's for sure very hard in the Red Bull Junior team.
I mean, it's a simple mechanic at the end of the day. You know, we'll keep funding you if you keep winning. Simple as that. And, if you're good enough, you've got nothing to worry about. It's fascinating hearing those stories about the early days of the Red Bull program. And then when you stepped into that Formula One car for the very first time, we've spoken to a few other drivers over the years on this podcast who have done that jump from either F3 or F2 into an F1 car. And they've said it's like nothing else. You know, it is so far away from anything else. Did you get that same sort of visceral experience where it was just a real shock at the pace and power of these machines?
to be honest, no. But I'll tell you why. So I jumped into the car. I did the installation lap. Came back in, and then my engineer, Daniel Sordo, Italian guy, was the engineer. He asked me, and how is it? Mind-blowing, how quick are these cars? And I said, they're not so fast. I thought they're a little bit quicker. And then he looked at the data and said to me, well, let's try and rev up the engine all the way to 19,000. I was shifting at 10,000 because I was used to it from Formula 3.
Yeah, yeah. So cruising along thinking, oh, this is easy.
Exactly.
It's a Sunday afternoon drive.
Yeah. So the next run, yes, it was mind-blowing. And more the braking than the acceleration. You get quite quickly used to the acceleration, but the braking performance of these cars is just amazing. And although I was trained and I was driving in Formula 3, I wasn't able to do more than 8 laps in a row. Then my neck just fell off and I couldn't see the corners anymore.
Is that still the case in F1 cars? Because I know back then it was more of a workout. Have you driven recent iterations of F1 cars? Is it still that stressful on your neck muscles?
I think nowadays, even more, let's say the last 2-3 years since they went to the, more downforce, bigger tires, the corner speeds are now higher than ever. But I guess the period, let's say, with the V10 engines, it was probably one of the fastest eras of Formula One. But yeah, it is now, it's still the case that neck muscles is everything. And if you're out of the car, even over a winter break, you just can't handle it. And also neck muscles are very difficult to train. So basically you need to spend the time in the car.
It's amazing when you do see an F1 driver in person, especially these days, their necks are just gigantic. It is ridiculous how much they have to work those out. But you get to Formula One, Christian. You find yourself there with Jaguar in that first year. Talk us through the first season, especially, and then the seasons to follow it when you made the move to the Red Bull outfits as well. Some of the highlights from that first year, because I suppose when you're chucked into a Jaguar racing team in Formula One as a rookie, it's always going to be tough, isn't it?
It's for sure very tough. I mean, you come from a small Formula 3 team with probably 20 employees, mechanics, and then you jump into a team, you know, with in the factory, there are 300, 400, 500 people working for two cars. That's just crazy. And the most difficult part is not just driving the car, but the way to understand who to communicate with. If you want to change something, want to have something, it's just a huge operation. And that's probably in the first year quite tricky to get used to. And driving-wise, I mean, for me, it was good. I had Mark Webber as a teammate. First of all, he was a very quick teammate. But he was also, you know, there was no politics with him. Mm. He was friendly. He was open. He was he shared information. He even gave tips. To the point, well, not when I was quicker than him, but all the way up there. So it was, I had, let's say, life made easy. My life was made easier because I have Mark as a teammate because he's very easygoing, let's say. Yeah. Highlight this year was for sure getting the first points in Spa, finishing P6. So P6 back then meant 1 point. Hmm. It was a bit harder, yeah.
Yeah, so much. I always look at that and go, God, they really didn't make it easy, did they? Now it's like anybody can get a bloody point, but it still, even in the top 10, it still seems difficult.
Yeah, way easier, yeah. And crazy. Then, I mean, Jaguar Racing was a typical midfield car. You know, sometimes it was a bit better, sometimes a bit worse. I think the car was good in qualifying, but race pace, we struggled most of the time. But anyway, it was a fantastic learning year. The difficulty then was it wasn't sure. Well, basically, Jaguar closed down the team at the end of the year. And it wasn't until, I think, November, when the news came out that Red Bull bought the team. And that also meant that it secured my my race seat for the year after.
Yeah, and you did continue with Red Bull, and as this new iteration of a team from 2005 into 2006. And then 2007, I suppose it must have been a shock when the day came that Red Bull was no longer your partner. I mean, how did that conversation come about? And take us through the emotions of that time. It must have been a difficult period.
For sure, a difficult period. And especially 2006 was a difficult year because the car was very unreliable. We had a lot of DNFs, both DC and myself, and it was trickier. And but basically, I heard about that I want to continue with Red Bull Racing in Monza, but I knew it already a couple of months before because Mark Webber again. Mark Webber came up to me and said, look, Christian, you should look for a new seat next year because I'm going to be the driver for Red Bull Racing next year. And the reason behind that is Adrian Newey wanted to have the Renault engines. In 2006, we still had Ferrari engines in. The Renault engine required a much smaller package in terms of cooling. So the Adrian Newey could build a more tighter car, let's say. And with the Renault deal made with Flavio Briatore came also Mark Webber. Right. So they had to take him to get the engines. And so I was running out of contract. DC still had one. So there was no place for me. So cool. I knew it already a bit earlier. And then Red Bull wanted me to go to IndyCars, but I wasn't keen on going there. I still saw chances for myself in Formula One, and that's how it then split with Red Bull.
Such a
it was a sad day for sure, But you know, I saw myself still in Formula One, and then I went to Honda as a reserve driver.
Yeah, it's such a cruel sport, isn't it? I mean, I don't know whether at the time it kind of sinks in what's happening, or you think, oh God, what am I going to do now? But when you hear you talk about it and you think about, you know, you've gone through this career of building up, going through all the processes, signing with Red Bull, winning races and championships, getting to Formula One, and then all of a sudden it's just taken away. Do you realise at the time the impact of that? Or as a racing driver, do you just think, well, you know, I've enjoyed my time, on to the next thing, I'll be back, no problem?
No, I think when you're younger, probably don't understand and don't have the time to understand also the politics in Formula One. And all you think about is racing, I have to be quick on the racetrack, and that's it. But there's much more to it, and you know, sometimes there's a I mean, Formula One is big business in the end. And sometimes there's just no space for you. And it's not even because of your performance or your talent or whatever. There's also, you need to have a bit of luck as well to be in the right spot at the right time. But you only realize a bit later when you see it, you know, when you grow up a little bit, understand the politics, see it from different perspectives.
It is fascinating how it all works. Were you not a little bit, I mean, I would be absolutely seething that if the guy who was replacing me was the one who told me about the fact that he was replacing me, even though you had such a good relationship with Mark at that time being teammates, were you a bit annoyed that that was how you first found out about the news?
No, because I'd rather hear it earlier than later. And at least this gave me another 1 or 2 months to look around. I mean, when Red Bull told me it was in Monza, that was already September, which is a bit late.
Right.
So I could have my eyes open and see what other options there are out there. But yeah, it's always difficult and not nice. And against DC, I did quite well. So you just feel it year by year. Experience is growing. You understand the sport better, the cars better, the tires better. And it just makes life easier and easier to get the performance out. Yeah. And for sure, a 4th year in a row would help a lot. Mm.
Yeah. Well, as
but
you say,
it is what it is. You can't change it.
It is what it is. And then you can only do what you can in the car. The politics and all that is out of your hands, isn't it? But post Red Bull, as you say, you went to Honda as reserve, and you also did work for Spyker, Force India, BMW, Sauber as well. How was that period of time where you were trying to find your way back to a race seat?
Well, extremely difficult. I mean, if you're back then, test driver wasn't too bad because there were still a lot of tests.
Yeah.
You were still driving a lot. And let's say you had a bigger role in the team than now. I mean, now what do you do? Simulator, yeah. And there's hardly any test days. So it's very hard for a reserve driver, let's say, to show in the team that you are quick, you know, and proof as well. Back then it was better, let's say. But to get back to a race seat is really difficult. But then I got a good offer from BMW in 2008 and 9, so 2-year contract as a test driver, and I did drive a lot. With 2010, I would have had the race seat, but then they pulled out.
How dare they? How dare they?
Wonderful, huh?
But it wasn't the end. It was not the end, because you did get back into Formula One.
Yes.
Your tenacity paid off, and you returned with HRT, good old HRT. How did that opportunity come about? And tell us a little bit about the experience.
It came about with Colin Collis. Obviously, I knew him since the Formula 3 days. I also had a couple of test days when he was at Force India or Spyker, can't remember. So anyway, it came because I had a good contact to Colin, and you know, he gave me the opportunity to do, to be the 3rd driver or even the 4th, can't remember, or the 5th. There were so many drivers there. But anyway, all the time, any time when I jumped in the car, I was most of the time quicker than Bruno Senna or Karun Chandok. And then that gave me the opportunity to do another three races this year. But to be honest, it wasn't really enjoyable. It was more watching the mirrors than anything else. The car itself wasn't too bad to drive, to be honest. It just was a huge lack of downforce compared to the other cars. Yeah. And after that, it was also in my mind. I said, okay, that's now it. And let's move on to something else.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was an interesting period of your career, and you know, you've been there, you've done it, you've raced in F1. That will never be taken away from you. So that's fantastic stuff.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsport. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first-class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including track tours, pit lane walks, VIP hospitality, and loads more. It really is the closest you can get to Formula One, and thanks to F1 Experiences, you can return to the track this year, and Motormouth listeners can save 5% on your next F1 Experiences package by using the code Motormouth when booking online at f1experiences.com.
Now listen, before we move on to the next part of the podcast, there is the most important piece to deal with, and I shall hand you over to my bearded colleague to introduce you to the Motormouth quiz.
Yes, Christian Kleen, we've reached the halfway point. Welcome to Motormouths, the hardest quiz in motorsport, mainly because either you, the guest, or the driver, cannot remember their career very well, or I have got the answers wrong, thanks to online Google Wikipedia research. But we're going to give it a go anyway. Now, there are four questions and a bonus question. And in total, there are 14 points up for grabs. If you get 14, you go straight to the top of the leaderboard. At the moment, that seat is occupied by Nelson Piquet Jr., who is just ahead of the former BBC broadcaster and now Channel 4 F1 broadcaster Lee McKenzie, and Alexander Sims from Formula E. He is in third at the moment. So that's who you want to be. If we're looking at some more, perhaps Red Bull colleagues as well, Mark Webber has 12 points and is currently tied in fifth position as well. So it's a big, long leaderboard. It does go all the way down to Karun Chandok, who is last in about 38th position. So you could land anywhere. Are you ready for your first question, Christian?
I'm ready. I'm ready for it.
All right.
Hit me.
First up, what position did you finish your first F1 race in, and where was it?
So the first race was in Australia, of course.
Correct.
I think. Did I finish 13th?
Oh.
No, 15.
No. Even
worse.
I'm afraid, Christian.
Oh, dear.
You were 11th.
Oh,
you were 11th. Yeah. You would have nearly got a point if it was modern day. But yeah, that's, so I'm going to give you, well, and of course, so that was, what year was it? Just for the points.
2004.
There you go. So I'll give you 2 out of 3 possible points on that one. So
generous.
Not too bad.
Very generous.
I know, I can be quite generous. But yes, it was 11th Melbourne, obviously with Jaguar in 2004. Okay, now we've just been talking, of course, about the ill-fated Hispania Racing Team. They actually raced 8 different drivers in their time. Can you name all of them?
All right, let's go. Karun Chandok,
yes.
Bruno Senna, Yamamoto.
Correct.
Liuzzi.
Yeah.
Ricciardo.
Mm-hmm.
Kleen.
Correct.
Shit. Okay.
I need two more.
Pedro Della Rosa.
Yes.
There you go.
Oh, can he get a full house?
Come on.
Now, this last guy would have been on the grid actually at the same time as you in, I want to say, 2004.
Wow.
So he was another who had a big, who sort of had a bit of a break and then came back. I'm kind of known for being the first ever driver from a particular country.
Ah, Katekayen.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Narain Karthikeyan.
What a legend.
He and De La Rosa were the most...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, I'm going to give you that. That was very good effort. I was going to give you full points if you got half of that, but well done. Good, that good. Is a full house. Okay. Now, unbelievably, you are still the most recent Austrian Formula One driver. Can you tell me how many total Austrian F1 drivers there have been in Formula One? So I'm looking for a number. And then can you tell me who was the last Austrian driver before you?
It's again tricky.
Before me was Alex Wurz.
Ah, okay. I'm just gonna double check that because I've got a different answer.
Before me, there was Alex Wurz.
But there was another one. When did Alex Wurz stop driving? What year was it?
You did Williams. When was that?
Oh, you're right.
He didn't have a second.
You're right. You're right. I'm wrong. I'm wrong.
Yes, exactly. Do your cool stuff well.
I'm wrong. I tell you who I had. I had Patrick Friesacher. But
yes. But Wurz came back for Williams. He did another season.
He did. Nope. I got caught out there. You're right.
Okay,
I'll give you. Yeah, you got the. I'll give you the point for Wurz. Can you get the extra points though for telling me in total how many Austrian F1 drivers there have been?
Yeah. It's, I'm not 100% sure. I go with 15.
Oh, I'm going to give you the points. It's 16. Well done. 16, yeah. I'm going to give you the points. It was, I can be like a list them all, because we had Gerhard Berger on the show a few months ago, so he was obviously one of them. Jochen Rindt, Dieter Questa, Helmut Marko, Niki Lauda, Helmut Koenig, Harald Ertl, Otto Stupacher, Karl Oppitzhauser, Hans Binder, Joe Gartner, Gerhard Berger, Karl Werdelinger, Roland Ratzenberger, Alexander Wurz, Christian Kleen, and Patrick Friesacher.
Quite a lot for such a small
It time. Is quite yeah. a lot, isn't it? Very but fun. Still, haven't been one since you. So we need to find the next Austrian talent.
Yeah.
How many points was that?
Would be good.
Soon. That was the full... I'm going to give you the full house. Right, we have... where are we now? Okay, one more, and then a bonus point. What season did you score your most Formula One points in?
2005.
Correct. Can you tell me how many you scored?
He was all cocky then, like, I've got these points.
Nine.
Threw that one in.
Correct.
Oh,
absolutely. Ow. Spot on.
How many points would it be in the modern days?
That's a good question. That is a good
next
question.
Next time on the racetrack.
That is a good question. That's what we should judge it by, really, because you can't. It's not an accurate depiction, I don't think. Okay.
I think in total I had 14 points in my career.
Yes, I think you did. According Wikipedia confirms that as well. But
sounds like not a lot. But again, old days.
Well, no, exactly. When only the top six can score points, it's like bloody hell. Come on, mate. Okay. Final one for you. For a bonus point, you've already scored more points than you did in your F1 career just in this quiz. So
Thank you. Putting your finger in the wound.
Now, you are currently racing GTs, of course, in various different championships. You race McLaren predominantly. Now, can you tell me the year McLaren was founded?
Wow.
Now, even if you're a couple out, I'll still give you the point.
Wow. 1963.
Have you just Googled that?
No.
That's correct. That's spot on.
Yes.
That was so lucky.
Oh, that is unbelievable. Yes, 1963. Well done. All right.
I was thinking about Bruce McLaren when he came over. Europe.
Fair play. Right, let me just do the math. 1, 2, 3, 4.
That's a decent score.
Okay, right. Christian Kleen. The bad news is it's not top of the leaderboard, but the very good news is you're second with 13 points. So not too shabby at all with that. the most people get about 10 points, and that puts them all the way down in bloody 20th position. But you're straight up there in second. Christian Kleen, thank you very much for playing the hardest quiz in motorsport.
Thank you. So right behind Nelson Piquet Jr. Correct.
You're right behind Nelson Piquet Jr., hot on his heels. So if you see him next time, we'll have to have a second round to try and get
him. Okay, I was beating him in the Marlboro Masters. So
there you go.
I'm just pleased that Harry got a question wrong. It always brings a little bit of joy in my life when Harry gets a question wrong. But I'm glad you took it in the spirit that it's intended. We've had one or two guests who don't like it when Harry gets a question wrong. I can't remember if it might have been Rosberg, I'm not sure, who was a little bit grumpy during parts of the podcast, and he wasn't in...
Well, it's because Rosberg didn't want to talk about his F1 career, that's why.
But well done you. You're on our podium, so congratulations.
Thanks for that.
Now, let's turn our attention to more recent history. I'm going to skip over a couple of things, so forgive me for that, but we can cover that on another podcast. You've done all sorts of stuff, including Bathurst and Blancpain, which is a championship that I really like, hugely competitive. But I want to talk to you about DTM. We're big fans of DTM. It's one of Harry's favourite series. You've bagged yourself a seat. You've got a race coming up. You're doing three rounds this year, hopefully doing a full season next year. Tell us about how this opportunity came around. Hugely, hugely exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very excited to drive in DTM. Obviously, I was following it all through the years, and I think in 2008 I had already a deal in the pocket with Mercedes, but then preferred to stay in Formula One with BMW. Yeah, it's great to be finally racing in that series. I followed the first two rounds, and it was great racing, good battles on track, close together. A lot of different car brands, and now we obviously join with the McLaren, another sexy looking car.
Yeah,
just can't wait for it. And basically, obviously, because it's GT3 cars now, it made it much easier, let's say, to join that championship with the current team that I'm with. And we just saw the opportunity in April when it, you know, like all came together. And said, let's join for three races, maybe a fourth Norris Ring at the end of the year. But I also have other commitments and clashes with the championship. That's why it's currently three.
Got you. And expectations for your first three races, have you got any? Or is it just about, you know, I think I saw one post of yours on your socials saying basically you're a rookie again. You know, so is this about learning, or are you expecting to get in there and be competitive straight off the bat?
I guess we should be competitive because, yes, I'm in the rookie in that championship. But, I mean, it's a GT3 championship in the end. And all the guys you race against in DTM, you usually race in GT World Challenge or somewhere else. So it's not too different. But it depends a bit where how they balance our car. I think there will be a few tweaks at the first race weekend in Zolder. But all in all, the guys who do the BOP from Austria did a very good job. Cars are quite leveled out. So probably I would say first weekend in Zolder, if we get two top 10 results, we will be quite keen. And then later on, top five, a podium.
Yeah.
This year would be awesome, yeah.
Why not? It's very exciting already. You know, you've got a huge amount of GT3 experience. So hopefully using all of that going into DTM as well in that new look championship for this year. Now, alongside racing, I should say, you're also working Formula One as a broadcaster as well now. So let's talk a little bit about Formula One today as well, if you don't mind. How are you seeing this season so far? What do you think of the current championship battle? I mean, I think we could all agree it's great just to see that Hamilton's actually being fought this time by somebody else. But of course, a bit of a hectic, hungry race as well. How do you look at it all?
I think it's a great championship so far. It's a great battle between Red Bull and Mercedes. It's, I have to say, it's very tense in the paddock, especially after Silverstone. But I think for the fans, for the media, for everybody, it's just great that this fight is going on now, because for many years it's been quite boring, to be honest, apart from the 2 years where Vettel pushed Lewis. I think it's just great, and it's fun fun to watch and follow the races and talk about it.
If you were a team boss, what would be your lineup? If you could pick any of the current crop, who would you take in your team?
Max Verstappen for sure. And then probably a Lando Norris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they would be an awesome combination who could push each other. You know, similar age, they would have probably fun beside the track as well.
Yeah.
And I think those two are, for me, this year, like, really stand out. I mean, Max has now a few years now in Formula One and is gaining experience, is calming down a bit more and is racing very clever, but extremely, extremely quick still. And I mean, Lando Norris in the McLaren is just fun to watch this year. I mean, it's amazing how he was growing up in these 3 years in Formula One to a lead driver now, you have to say. And it's just weekend in, out. He just performs always the maximum of the car. I mean, and that shows also where he stands in the world championship. He's third, beating a Mercedes and a Red Bull car. It's
it's amazing.
That's fabulous.
What do you make of the whole Daniel Ricciardo situation? I mean, is it a case of he just needs time, or is he simply being outperformed by a better driver?
I think he still needs some time. You know, when you're not 100% confident in the car and you can't push the car at 100%, you just, you know, you lose half a tenth there, half a tenth there, and it adds up. And then you have a teammate like Lando who just hammers every corner, every lap at the moment. He feels extremely comfortable in the team. He has all the support. So it's let's say it's easy to break as well, but I don't think Ricciardo will break because we know his talent. He is good. And the good thing, Seidel, Andreas Seidel and McLaren, they seem to be also patient. And there are signs of him that he will be back. And I'm personally 100% sure that he will be back, maybe not in this car currently, but for sure next year in the new regulation cars. Mm-hmm. That would help him, I think. That will be a big boost. Everybody starts from zero.
Exactly. I think that'll be really exciting for everybody, really. A sort of fresh slate, isn't it? Now, let's move on a little bit because we're rapidly running out of time, Christian, and we don't want to keep you too much longer. We've got a few quick-fire questions to throw at you. Now, obviously, we've established you're quite a decent racing driver. What are you good at outside of racing?
Outside of racing, I'm good in all kind of sports, and I love skiing. And I have to say I'm a good skiing instructor.
Really?
Yeah, two former girlfriends and the current one, I was teaching skiing. They're pretty good now. One of it was an Australian. Can you imagine?
They should all have a race. It feels like there's a competition element here. We get all the ex-girlfriends together.
Was it just after the skiing instructing lessons that they became former girlfriends? Or was it,
after the après-ski, to be honest.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Oh, absolutely brilliant.
Cut that one out. Let's flip it on its head. What are you completely useless at? What are you crap at?
I'm crap at heights. Mm. So everybody thinks racing drivers are basically, you know, have big balls. But when it comes to base jumping or anything with heights, you know, I'm as small as a mice and I'd like to run away.
Heights at the best of times for anybody, I feel like they can't be too. I don't know, unless you're a proper adrenaline junkie and just love the thought. Yeah. Maybe that, I don't know. It's just jumping off, like even bungee jumping. All you can think of is, what if that thing breaks and snaps?
No way.
Absolutely not.
Drivers, they like to have things under control.
Yes.
And even though if we go flat out through a rouge, we're still in charge and we are under control. And that's not the case, I don't know, when if you're a passenger in a plane or you're base jumping or anything else.
Yeah.
Even riding a horse. No way.
Oh, God, no. Horses are dangerous. You fall off that and you're absolutely not. And I think you did a pretty good move this year in Eau Rouge, didn't you not? In GT Open, I think it was. Not too shabby from you.
Yeah, How did you call it? Ballsy?
Yeah, I did say yes. Talking of balls, it was ballsy. There we go. There we go. I think I'm allowed to get away with saying that on commentary. Now, Christian, though, before we come on to our final three questions, one more for you. If you could have done anything differently in your career so far, would you have done it, and what would it be?
Ooh, that's a good question. To be honest, no, because you're only always more clever afterwards, but not really in the situation. And I could have said in 2006, yeah, I stay with Red Bull, I go to America, but I'm pretty sure it would have lasted another year and then I would have been kicked out. So I rather took my chance and stay in Formula One, even though it was the harder fight, let's say, but I still had good years. I was able to do Le Mans afterwards and all good. I couldn't do it any different. It wouldn't be any better probably, yeah.
Very good. A life without regrets is what we like. Now, we're going to move on to our final three, which are brought to you by our partners at F1 Experiences. I'll kick off this week. Christian, what's got you excited at this very moment?
If I look out of the window, I see the sun is coming out and I can go up the mountains.
Beautiful. Can you see the mountains from where you are? Is it that
close? I can.
Jealous. I'm so jealous.
I wish I had that.
I'm sat here in leafy Bedfordshire. All I can see is the side of my barbecue and a few clouds and a tatty looking fence. Life could be a lot better.
Use your imagination.
Oh, okay, the fence is a mountain.
Not Harry, quite the same as the Alps.
Over to you. I think we know the answer to this next one.
I think we do know the answer to this one. I suppose I'm going to ask it again just in case there's something else. What are you scared of? Would it be the heights, or is there something else, like an animal or any kind of phobia?
Scared. Yeah, well, I'm scared of all kind of different animals, yes. But probably most scared, I did it a couple of times, being a passenger when you're coaching somebody. I tell you, that's seriously scary.
Yes, I can imagine. Oh, it's that lack
especially
of control.
It's that whole thing.
They're good drivers, huh?
Yeah.
Especially it's that whole thing of being out of control, isn't it? You're not
exactly,
in control of it. Yeah,
yeah.
Brilliant.
You're totally right. I did... I don't know if you've done it, Christian, at Bedford Autodrome, the Palmer Sports stuff. And I went there with Max Chilton once and I thought I was flying. I was in the F3 car. I thought I was absolutely hammering it. And it's not a huge track there. And he finished about 13 seconds in front of me. It was embarrassing. And I was like, I don't know how you can actually go any faster. Anyway.
And it was not the Nordschleife, yeah?
No,
so
yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. It was a tame one, but I was appalling. Harry wouldn't know because he quite frankly can't fit in a racing car because he's about 84 foot tall.
I'm too big. Yeah, they would never let me into a racing car, especially not a single seater. I'm not very aerodynamic, I don't think.
No, you're not.
you get in, but not out, probably.
Yeah. Yes.
Final question for you before we sign off. Where's your favourite Formula One destination?
Singapore.
Oh yeah, nice one. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Singapore Formula One, and otherwise it's Bathurst. Bathurst in a GT3 car.
Yeah, I'd
love to
do a bit of Bathurst. I'm going to be interested to see what happens with Singapore because Formula One have got this sort of charter, this sustainability and climate change charter. And then you go to places like Singapore and think they're lighting up that city in the middle of the night with, you know, these hugely powerful bright lights that are just chewing electricity. It's not the best look for a race series that's trying to be green. But anyway, that's for another day. Listen, Christian, brilliant to chat to you. Thank you so much. You've been loads of fun. Congratulations on getting on the podium on our quiz. You know, that's clearly the highlight of your career. Forget Red Bull. best of luck in your DTM exploits this year and next year as well. Before we sign off, just let people know where they can find you. Can we find you on social media? Where do we get in touch?
Yeah, on social media, you can find me simply under Clean Christian or on Twitter, CK_Clean. So that's where you can find me on social media. And thanks a lot to be part of the show. It was a lot of fun, yes.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the sport. Official ticket packages, which include the best race tickets, first class hotels, travel and exclusive behind the scenes access across a Grand Prix weekend. F1 Experiences offer packages like no other. So to book your F1 Experiences package, head online to f1experiences.com, and if you enter code Motormouth, you'll get 5% off too. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.